Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, the host of WNYC's New Tech City, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And over the summer, for the very first time, some big tech companies released information on the diversity of their workforce. Here's how they stack up when it comes to gender. Facebook, Google, Twitter, they all disclose that about 30% of their workers are women. And when it comes to technical staff, the numbers drop even lower. At Twitter, for example, only one out of every 10 tech employees is female. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about getting more girls and women to code, but today we want to talk about what life is like for women in Silicon Valley and here on New York's tech scene. So, women in tech, do you have a story, good or bad, about working at a startup or a big company? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We'd love to hear from you because joining me now is Rachel Sklar, the co-founder of Change the Ratio, a group that works to increase visibility and opportunity for women in tech and new media. And Rachel, you were quoted in a big story in Wired last week. The headline in Wired was, "This is what tech's ugly gender problem really looks like." And you told a story of an investor who said he doesn't invest in women. Why?
Actually, well, I didn't personally tell that story. I'm pretty sure that that was Catherine Tucker. What I did was I convened a panel during New York's Internet Week called Fundraising While Female with a number of amazing female entrepreneurs, and it was meant to be a frank discussion about the experience and what might be different. And certainly there are things that are different.
Yeah, because one of the stories is that an investor who says he doesn't invest in women, he doesn't find attractive, like pretty.
That may have been my off-the-cuff anecdote of something that an investor told me at one time. This is all anecdotal, but it definitely adds up. The story that you specifically referred to, I'm fairly sure was Catherine Tucker, the CEO of Red Rover, and an early female entrepreneur taking an investment in the tech space. I think her first round was in 2010, but she cited an investor who said that he didn't like investing in women because he didn't like the way women thought, and he found their way of thinking inferior to that of men. I mean, just ludicrous, ludicrous, ludicrous stuff. And then Catherine Minshew was quoted heavily in both the Wired piece.
She's the founder of the Muse, right?
Our panel. Yes. She's the CEO and co-founder of the Muse. I'm an advisor to the Muse, so I've been with them since before they even had a name. And Catherine is quite fetching. That is, that can sometimes be an issue. In meetings, she would talk about how she would have to schedule meetings not in hotel bars after 9 p.m. and sort of cited a few instances where the overtures were clearly not that of being interested in investing in the company, but rather more immediate overtures.
And so you're mentioning anecdotes, but I will say, like, I found one MIT study that came out very recently that said that investors do prefer pitches presented by male entrepreneurs compared with pitches made by female entrepreneurs, even when the content of the pitch is exactly the same. And then there's another recent report that says only 13% of venture-backed companies have at least one female co-founder. So these anecdotes are actually turning into changes or affecting what gets funded.
Well, and that was the point of Change the Ratio, which was very literally about the ratios that you cite, which are so wildly lopsided that unless you really think that men are that much better than women or that white people are that much better than people of color, then you have to acknowledge that there are systemic inequalities in the system, which over and over again favor the same demographic, which tends to be white, affluent, and male. And that's an uncomfortable truth. That has been an uncomfortable truth to acknowledge in Silicon Valley. It certainly was in 2010 when I started my agitation with Change the Ratio. And seeing the arc of change and acknowledgement that has happened over the last few years has really I mean, it's been obviously very frustrating at times, particularly when you cite those kinds of blatant statistics. But it's been heartening. At the very least, you see acknowledgement happening. And the process of acknowledgement is a key first step to changing the ratio. And I realize that it sounds like I have wildly low expectations, but it is. But that is the thing that gets the ball rolling. And I do think that when Sheryl Sandberg published Lean In, it made something that had previously been implicit explicit, because Lean In became sort of the code word for the fact that there was this inequality, systemic inequality, not only in technology, but for women in business, women in leadership, and that there was this sort of preconception of what a leader looked like and behaved like. And
Rachel, I'm just going to hold that thought. I want to take a call from Elliot in Brooklyn. Elliot, you're on WNYC. Do you work in tech?
Hello.
Hi, do you work in tech?
Yeah, so I run a technical recruiting firm in New York City, that I own for about 10 years, and then I'm a founder of a software firm as well.
And what have you found?
Well, for the record, let me say that I am a big fan of the Riot Girl movement and Kathleen Hanna. So my predisposition is on the feminist front. But yeah, there's no doubt. The problem is that when you have a bunch of guys interviewing a candidate, they're just naturally predisposed, probably at a subconscious level, to be sexist. And they, the firms are filled with guys. It's a very frat boy environment, with programmers. And women just generally, even though they're the better candidate by far, just don't stand a chance. Now, if it's in creative, design, marketing, it's a different story. But certainly within tech, product management, and even project management, overwhelmingly, it's a boys' club.
So, Elliot, what do you say then to people who are hiring? Do you say, like, let me tell you, this woman is the best candidate? There's just no doubt. Do you try to talk them out of it or play them some Riot Girl music, or what do you do?
I always send them, La Tigre or the Jewelry Ruin or, lots of music. But, the other problem is in the New York tech scene, you're usually dealing with millennials who don't have a lot of experience and who think they know everything. So to be consultative with them is actually pretty difficult. And because they probably only had, 0.75 jobs in their career, they just don't know what they don't know. And so it's just sort of taking on a life of its own. And it just becomes almost like it's just not even worth sending a woman into these because, frankly, they're uncomfortable interviews. I had two women who are supremely qualified for jobs meet recently at a media firm. And they came out and they said, everyone I met was a guy. It was a real boys' club. And at times it was uncomfortable, and it was clear to me, and this is a quote, that the last place the head of the department wanted to be was in a room interviewing me. And then, then another candidate who was a guy, got the job. And going in, frankly, I ranked him, third.
Huh.
So the other two were clearly better candidates.
Elliot, thank you. That's coming from a guy who's obviously seeing this happen, Rachel. He's actually seeing the hiring happen. This idea of a boys' club, and I do want to, before I go back to you, Rachel, I want to give a little shout out to millennials. Did what Elliot say just sort of piss you off? Because if it did, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Rachel, the old boys' club. What you're trying to do is create an old girls' club? Is that what needs to be done, sort of counter that?
Well, we can just leave age out of it. I'm no millennial, but I was getting equally worked up over what Elliot was saying, both in terms of his the anecdotes he was saying and the frustration about the fact that he said that, it wasn't even worth sending women into these situations, as opposed to, frankly telling these clients that they were turning away qualified candidates because of their own bad work environments and that was an actual detriment to their future productivity. All of the data shows that diversity is good for business, it's good for innovation, it's good for productivity, and that when there are more women involved, particularly at the executive levels, that a better product and a better result is achieved. With respect to the Old Boys Network, it's been sort of happening for many, many years, obviously. And one of the things that Change the Ratio morphed into or spun out was something called The List, which is my own company with my co-founder, Glynis McNichol. And we essentially collect, you know, great forward-thinking, action-oriented women in a network, a professional and personal network, so that we can just shorten the distance from A to B. So it's a place to be able to get, you know, hooked up with investors, get hooked up with clients, get quick advice, not just about being a woman in business, but like practical things about business. Like, do you, you know, like the amount of the diversity of questions and the breadth of questions and commentary that we get on The List is really quite amazing, and it's useful. It's useful for people, and so we've definitely seen that you know, the reason the Old Boys Network has existed for years is because it works, and so Rachel, women are making efforts to replicate that.
I want to ask you
and make it work for them right now. So, and all of this is how things change as well. It's not an us versus them thing. I, you know, particularly when you're talking about power, money, and influence, which the gatekeepers to that are still overwhelmingly male. So it's very, very important to have men who are allies in this mission, and that's why the acknowledgement is so important. And so where it's recognized not just as a social good, like, gee, it'd be really swell to have lots of diverse people in our company, like, that's all well and good, but the actual argument that is the most persuasive and should be the most persuasive is the bottom line argument, which is this is best for your company, not just now, but in the future. See where the wind is blowing. Like, you know,
this story
is where the world is trending.
I love this story in that Wired article about Sherry Atwood, who's the founder of a company called Support Pay. It helps divorced parents share and manage child support. And when she was trying to raise money, she says that one investor told her she should go hire a young guy in a hoodie. And she said, well, young guys and hoodies don't usually have to manage child support. So it just really made me think, are we as consumers losing out because some of these projects that apply or startups that apply to women or other demographics don't get funded because of bias?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that hopefully we are seeing change. But I think absolutely, you know, you have all of these concepts that originate within the same narrow demographic of people who are able to get in front of investors and then appeal to them. So one of the problems in terms of diversity of projects getting funded is that typically, again, the gatekeepers, if they all come from the same narrow demographic, then they're going to see things with the same lens, as opposed to recognizing that there's a flank of the market and market need that, because it doesn't apply to them, that they're completely missing, who are leaving tons of money on the table. The example I always like to use for this is hair, because the hair care market is like just a gazillion dollar market. It's huge, with people, you know, with customers who purchase across a spectrum of products and invest so heavily, particularly African American women. And so if you're bringing sort of any sort of a hair care idea in front of investors who are typically men, so which means that their hair care needs are, you know, are
different,
less extreme. You know, think in New York, humidity in the summer, and and my Semitic hair. So there are certain needs that women with a lot of hair have.
Rachel, I want to go to Jessica in Bernardsville, New Jersey. Hi, Jessica. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Good morning. First of all, right out of the box, I need to respond to Elliot. It was not cute for him to refer to Riot Girl songs. I think that reflects and underscores exactly the type of attitude that we need to change in the tech world, in that women are not a novelty. We're not a cute aside in a room full of men. And even my comment now, I'm sure he can come back with some clever quip as to, oh, you're a feminazi. I think the whole attitude is that women are essential, and we need to put into action changes that are going to give them a seat at the table and not just place them again as kind of, oh, well, you know, what angry comment are you going to dish out? And, well, you're irrelevant anyway.
I mean, so, Jessica, though, I have to say, yeah. I thought that Elliot sort of seemed like a nice guy and really seemed to be on the right side of it, that he was trying to promote women in tech. And so I don't want to really attack people like him, no? I mean, surely we should be saying, yes, let's have more Elliots in the world.
I don't agree. I think there's kind of an undertone there that is kind of a self-congratulatory tone to say that, yes, see, I know what you're about, when you really don't, because at the end of the day, you're telling me that women are really just not worth his time.
Jessica, thank you so much.
I have to say that I do work in the tech industry,
yeah.
and it is going to take a lot to change, and it's going to take people like me who are going to be just slightly more aggressive and not always have to be the nice girl.
No, I hear you. Cool. Thanks, Jessica. Jessica calling from Bernardsville. Let's go to Elizabeth, caller one, Elizabeth in New Hyde Park. Hi, Elizabeth. Can you hear me? You're on WNYC.
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you. I do computer training. I've been doing it for more than 15 years, and I have specialized in several programs that have a sort of technical aspect. And I have found in the past few years, especially since I specialize in programs, I'm talking something like Visio or MS Project or even some of the higher levels of Excel, that when I teach, when I've been brought into a training situation, people expect me to be different than a male trainer. And they...
What do they expect of you, Elizabeth?
I'll explain what I mean by that. If a male trainer explains why you would need this particular feature of access, what you would use it for, where it's come in handy for him, people accept that. And they're very happy that he's explained that to him. But when I teach that way, I get comments on my evaluation. She tells too many stories.
Huh. Let's go.
As a trainer, I'm not expected to talk about something that I don't know.
So
if somebody's asking me a question that I don't know the answer to, it's considered perfectly okay to say, I will get you some references on that. I can see why that would be of interest, and go on.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Rachel, I just want to go back to you to sort of mention what Elizabeth is talking about. She's talking about a different style of communication. Would you say that misogyny, or whatever we want to call it, is worse in tech than other sectors because of this different style of communication, potentially?
Well, actually, it's not. Elizabeth wasn't talking about a different style of communication. She was talking about how that communication was received when delivered from men versus women, and so that is the issue when women display leadership. And Jessica alluded to this too about, you know, she doesn't feel the need to be nice all the time if she wants to get things done. There is a premium placed on women being agreeable and nice and super helpful, and that just doesn't exist in the same way with men. So it's a classic double standard of a man can be assertive and a woman is being pushy, all of that. And I think that that's what Elizabeth seemed like she was getting at, was that she's perfectly qualified and able to explain the features required, and yet she is perceived differently than a man who has more implicit authority. And I will just say that I appreciated Jessica's comment, because, you know, though it's important to have allies and it's important for men to be allies, it's not just about, you know, being able to say, like, I read Lean In, so I'm going to, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Riot Girl. But as soon as I hear the but, it sounds to me like that initial disclaimer is not going to be helpful. and you know, for Elliot's ultimate point was that he has not been successful placing women. That was what his ultimate point seemed to be, and that to me says that, you know, in 2014. It's time to we've got a lot of companies now who are recognizing that they need diversity and that diversity is good for the bottom line. So get ahead of that curve, man, if you want to do well in your industry. And so, you know, not to be unreceptive to friendly overtures. But I do think that it is important to just say, okay, great, I'm so happy that you're a fan of diversity. In 2014, can we stop with the disclaimers and just focus on pushing forward?
Great. I'm sure this is a discussion that will go on well past 2014, but we have to leave it there for now. Rachel Sklar, co-founder of Change the Ratio, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I just want to add, tomorrow on New Tech City, we have a special encore episode about how one college changed the way it taught computer science, and it quadrupled its number of female computer science majors. This show is only online, not on air. So go to newtechcity.org and click subscribe, and you will have it waiting for you when you wake up tomorrow.